Hi, this is Zoe, and this is episode 48, and we are doing a book review of Chip and Dan Heath's new book, Moments. Yeehaw!
Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
So here we are, and I love the fact that there's a book out called The Power of Moments. Being the author of a book called Moments, Leadership When It Matters Most, I thought, I have to get this book and I have to digest it, obviously, to see what they had to say. Plus, I love Chip Heath and Dan Heath. They're brothers, and they've published some amazing books previously. One's called Switch, and the other one is Made to Stick. It's all about change management. So this was a bit of a gear shift, this particular book. So it's hot off the presses, and I thought we'd do something a little bit different and do a bit of a book review for the podcast this week. I read a lot of books, and I think it's useful to get somebody else's opinion before you dive in and invest. So here we go. I'm also back from Sri Lanka. I was away for 10 days at a friend's wedding there. So she's Australian. She married a Sri Lankan fella. And we went over to experience the full Hindu wedding in the Sri Lankan country, which goes over a number of days. There's different events for the wedding, and it was great fun. A couple of key observations, I guess, from Sri Lanka, which I didn't expect. Colombo is the capital, and we spent the majority of our time there. I found Colombo incredibly clean. I did not expect that. I've been to India a couple of times, and I thought Sri Lanka would be similar. And yet it's not. Apparently the efforts of the recent government to clean up Colombo have really reaped its benefits. So once the town was cleaned up, people sort of wanted to keep it clean. So the streets are actually pretty spotless. I was pretty amazed. I mean, there's lots and lots of traffic. That's pretty nuts. But it's relatively clean. The canals and stuff are a little bit cluttered still, and the back streets are still a bit untidy, but relatively speaking, thumbs up. Tuk-tuks are a lot of fun. They're like a three-wheeled motorbike, covered motorbike that you get around on a taxi. So that was really fun. And I love how in Colombo, the traffic lanes are merely a suggestion. So there might be two lanes of traffic as per sign posted on the road, but you might have four, five, six vehicles abreast weaving in and around. And I guess my observation with that is when everybody agrees on the rules, even if there are different rules to what we have, it all works. And so we never saw an accident, even though if people tried to drive like that here in Australia, there would be a lot of bruised and bumped people for sure. So lots of exciting tales to tell from Sri Lanka, but those were some of the key insights. Beautiful country. We had a really, really good time there. Some other news and events. Our leadership intensive kicks off in 2.5 weeks, I think, and we've got two spots left. This is the first time we're running a leadership intensive retreat in Tasmania. I'm super excited about this. And so we've got a nice little group going. And yeah, if you're keen, hop onto the website, zoerouth.com, and click on events, and you'll find the leadership intensive information there. Likewise, we're going back to Tassie in February with the Leader's Edge Mastermind. That's my high-level 12-month program. And we have three spots left on that program. It's going to sell out. So if you've been thinking about it, do give me a buzz. zoe@innercompass.com.au, and let's have a chat. And the other exciting thing, launch of the Edge of Leadership Unconference. The Unconference is running in March. We've soft launched it. Our launch ticket prices are now on, and we're 30% sold out on the event already. So it's going to be a really amazing event. We've changed up the venue. We're going low brow, big views, and that's going to make it so much better. That's just one of the things we're changing up. We've got some amazing speakers. We've got our keynote, Craig Rispin, who I've known for years and is a fabulous futurist and just an amazing man. So all those things to look forward to, you can find them all on the website. If you want to look up the show notes for this podcast episode, go to zoerouth.com/podcast/ChipDan. That's Chip and Dan Heath, who are the authors of the book I'm reviewing. Chip as in C-H-I-P, Dan as in Dan the man, Dan, Chip Dan. All right, so the book, and it is officially called, let me just get the book title out for you, The Power of Moments. It's just disappeared off my Kindle. Just hang on a second. Cover. Here we go. That's it. Why certain experiences have extraordinary impact. I love it. Now, in my book, Moments, Leadership When It Matters Most, my premise is that every moment matters. And how you show up in the moment makes a big difference. Their key premise in their book is that we can design defining moments. We don't just have to wait around for them to happen spontaneously, though they do. We can actually increase the number of amazing experiences we have with deliberate design, which is a pretty cool premise. I like that idea. Is also, because it fits in with my world philosophy, that is that we can design our life any way we like it. So in their research, they identified four main things that you need to have in order to have a meaningful peak experience or a meaningful defining moment, if you like. And you don't need all four of them to make a defining moment, at least one of the key elements. And the four key elements make a little acronym called EPIC. Ha ha ha, like epic moment. Anyway, acronyms are kind of cutesy, but anyway, this is what they stand for. E is for elevation. And what they mean by that is that when we elevate the sensory pleasure of a moment, we can make it more memorable and more significant. What does elevate sensory pleasure mean? It means adding color and surprise and making the stakes higher. Or you can disrupt routines to make it more elevated. So an example of that in practical terms is if you are going to elevate a moment like a meeting. Here's a standard, bog standard thing in organizations. And people have been talking about this for a while now. Do something different. Make it a sensory rich experience. Go for a walk outside. Hold your meeting around a pool. Go and make people wear different colored hats. Now, not everybody's a fan of different colored hats, so you don't want to piss people off, that's for sure. But you can find ways of making things more heightened. And novelty is one of the things that makes a moment a defining moment. And Chip and Dan Heath said that. That's why in their reviews, the number of defining moments that people come back with tend to cluster around the ages of 15 to early 20s. And that's because we're going through a lot of first significant experiences, first kiss, leaving school, starting university, first job. Those firsts are pretty significant. And novelty and first times are ways to make things more defining. So we can design that more critically by not always having first moments. However, we can elevate the sensory-rich experience around these things. So breaking the routine can be just a simple way of doing that, and you can apply that in all sorts of contexts. So E in the EPIC formula is elevation. I is for insight. And what they're saying is that any kind of experience we can design that helps us learn more about ourselves or offers a truth, then that's a useful thing. So there's two things they talk about with this. For individuals, creating experiences that stretch people is one way of doing that. You stretch people, get them out of their comfort zone. We've heard that cliche for a long time, how getting out of your comfort zone is a good thing. And certainly that's one of the key tenets of outdoor experiential education, is that you get people out of their normal circumstances and you put them in unique circumstances, i.e. out in the wilderness where they don't have their usual creature comforts. And they've got to learn new ways of being and experiencing the world. So that whole novelty thing, the whole sensory-rich experience, and plus putting them out of their comfort zone, gives them the ability to stretch and learn. Now, what I love about this, and they've got a great quote, that the purpose of stretching is not success, it's learning. And they put this in the context of sales. What they mean by that is, one of the most confronting things that people find actually is going into a sales role and picking up the phone, making calls and getting rejected. And that can be very confronting when you first do it. So the idea is not to pick up the phone to learn how to do sales. It's pick up the phone and stretch yourself so that you can learn more about yourself. You may be successful or you may not, but it doesn't matter because the learning is the key thing, not necessarily whether you're successful or not. So you can think about this. It's kind of like a growth mindset concept, right? So as you try new things, you're looking for learning. You're not necessarily looking to win. And I think that's a key difference. And when you have those kinds of experiences, it creates really good defining moments. You know, last time you tried something that was unusual, out of your comfort zone, and it stretched for insight. So I was talking to a client today, and she's at the early stages of her management career, and she's terrified of networking. And so we talked about some of the skills in networking and how to create good conversations and how to ask better questions. So equipped with her new questions and her new skills, she went to this networking event, a lunch, and was totally nervous. And yet she said, okay, I'm going to have a crack at this. And so she did. She asked a couple of questions. She stayed open to people. She stayed curious. And she was surprised at the outcome. It didn't necessarily mean that she got business out of it or that people became her best friends. It's that she got insight about herself and the fact that she can actually hold a conversation with strangers and not have the world dissolve in front of her. So that's one way of doing insight, is doing a stretch for insight. Another way of doing insight to design memorable moments is to, as they describe it, hit them between the eyes with an obvious truth. And they have this key story in the book around Kamal Carr, who was working in developing countries to install sanitation. And what they found in the towns that they, or the little rural villages where they installed toilets and outdoor plumbing, is that they installed these beautiful facilities, but 6 months down the track, the people weren't using them. They were still crapping out the back in the bush. They thought, why? Why? We solved the problem. We put in this infrastructure. Why are they still pooping in the bush and creating all sorts of health concerns as a result of that? So they went and they had a look around, and they realized that the reason that people weren't using the facilities is that the facilities were nicer than their own kitchen sink. So they didn't want to poop in them. They just felt it was wrong. So they actually had to change beliefs and perception around what these facilities were like. So Kamal Carr took the villagers around the outside of the village, and he asked them questions. He basically did this all through questions. He's like, show me where people poop. And so people pointed out, and he'd ask questions about the poop. You know, why is this one yellow? Why is this one brown? Who was here? Who did their job out here this morning? And, you know, it was awkward and funny at the same time. And then he had them do a mud map about all the different poo zones, et cetera. And then he got even more into this. And he asked the lady, so do you trust the water in this village? She's like, yeah. So he got her to pour a glass of water for him. And he said, he plucked a hair out of his head, and then he went and plunked it in some poo that was nearby, and then dunked it in his glass of water and said, now would you drink this water? And nobody said yes. Of course not. That's disgusting. A piece of hair dunked in poo, then dunked in your water. Who's going to drink that? Gross. And then he said, well, you see these flies? The flies going all over the poo? And they're like, yeah. He said, well, flies actually have serrated legs, which are far more adhesive than this piece of hair. And you see how the flies go all over the poo, and then they go all over your food. And the truth kind of hit them between the eyes. They realized they'd been eating each other's poop for years. How gross. And so you can imagine the enthusiasm for solving this problem became immediate. It's like, oh my Lord. So they're impossible to stop the flies, possible to stop the poop, because they can use the facilities that were designed for them. So the adoption of use of the facilities went up significantly after this kind of moment, a carefully designed moment where you showcase the truth of what's going on and people see it for themselves. It's no point just lecturing people about, you know, flies go on poo and poo goes, you know, and then they go onto your food. It's better to actually have them witness it and get it themselves. And this is a key training principle, right? So in my experiential training, for example, you can talk about team dynamics until the cows come home. And yet until you have people work out how to lead each other in difficult circumstances, they don't get it until they get it. So an example of this, I have one client who we did this program a few years ago, and he was the leader of the day, and he was leading an activity through a cave. Now, caving is usually an environment which has heightened sensory awareness, so it's already got that tick. It's an elevated moment from that regard. You don't get to go caving every single day. So it was unusual. It was the first time for many, and he was in charge. And he was a lot more comfortable in the cave than a lot of others. And what he did as a leader is that he kept running ahead and checking things out. He was just like a little Labrador dog in there. He was so excited to be down there. And other people were not as comfortable. And they kept calling him back, calling him back, calling him back. And he kept running off on his own. And he was the leader. And they debriefed after this because there was a lot of tension in the group as a result of this, you know, and they came to loggerheads and they had some crackly words with each other. And he still talks about that incident now with me. He goes, yeah, I didn't really get it. I get now. It was a really significant moment for me because I realized how much I do that, how I feel comfortable with something and I surge ahead and I just expect other people to feel comfortable too. But it wasn't until I was in the cave and people were getting anxious and antsy with me and they gave me the feedback afterwards that I truly got that notion that people are different to me and that I need to meet them where they are. He wouldn't have necessarily have embraced that feedback as well as he did if he just had it in a performance for you, say, for example. So the fact that it was in heightened circumstance with very emotional, heightened emotion made it a much more useful peak experience for him. So it kind of hit him between the eyes, if you like. And when we're designing experiential programs, we're very careful to think about that. What kinds of experience are going to challenge people and what kind of behaviors are going to draw it out and what kind of truths are possible for people in that kind of environment. It's why I'm such a big proponent for doing outdoor experiential work because it is a container for so much insight. And insight, according to Chip and Dan Heath, is one of the things that makes a moment epic or memorable or peak, if you like. So we've done E, we've done I. Oh, I did it out of sight, out of sync. So E, I, and P. P in the epic formula is pride. Those moments where you get to be singled out. And there's two types of pride moments. One is the moments of achievement. These are kind of obvious ones, you know. We hit a milestone, we achieve promotion, it's social recognition, we get things like that, or where we can feel prideful and we're socially celebrated. Those are obvious ones, and we can do more of that, I reckon. We don't do enough celebrating of achievements. Another aspect of pride are moments of courage. And their research showed that when we observe other people demonstrating courage, it also boosts us. It's a memorable moment for us. And you think about that from a movie's point of view. How many movies have you seen where you see the characters demonstrate courage and how uplifting it is for us just to watch it, even though it's a fictional movie? It can be quite engaging. It has a huge ripple effect. And we think about the people we believe as courageous, and it inspires us to try new things ourselves. So if we can design moments with our staff, with our family, where we can be courageous and point it out and celebrate it, it's a way of causing a ripple effect of confidence and stepping up and stepping out and making moments more memorable. Another one aspect of the pride one. No, that's it. That's it. Moments of courage and moments of achievement. And the fourth piece in their epic formula for amazing moments is connection. This seems obvious to me. So things like weddings, graduations, baptisms, and vacations where we gathered together and where there is no purpose except to share joy is really useful. I think the other thing, I was just reading Brené Brown's new book, which is called Braving the Wilderness, and she said that there's actually a lot of connection experience when people share pain as well. The spontaneous social gathering in moments of communal grief. So if you think about, the moment I think about was 9/11. So watching what happened to those towers on TV, it was late night here in Australia, and knowing I had friends and family overseas, and the next morning coming together with other people, we were working at Outward Bound at the time, there was a group of us, we came together just to talk and to share and to grieve together about this terrible atrocity that was happening on the other side of the world. And that shared grief, and it happens at funerals also, is a cathartic, memorable experience because it heightens our sense of common humanity. So anytime we can create opportunities to gather and just be together and to acknowledge each other is a really powerful way of creating moments that make a difference. So we talked about social ones, we talked about grief ones, sadness ones, and shared experience through hardship. Again, this is an outdoor experiential tenet. It's certainly an outward bound tenet. And their motto is to serve, to strive, and not to yield. And through that, they outward bound designs experiences that are pretty tough. And when you're going through a tough experience with a group, you bond. You really do bond. Because you need each other to get through, you rely on each other, and then you have this whole common shared story. That's again one of the reasons why I advocate to a lot of my organizations that I work with that we do something epic like that, because you build shared story, and those shared connections create this web of emotional bond that helps us to do our daily work. So we don't need to go out into the wilderness all the time to do this. We can create an opportunity to connect and to share and to come together. Okay, so those are the four key principles that Chip and Dan Heath share: elevation, insight, pride, and connection. A couple key points. You don't have to have all four elements in order to create a newsworthy moment, if you like. Just one of them is significant. I think their other key summary point is that we can all be more intentional about this, and especially at work and workplaces. As leaders, we can really think about how we can make moments more special for people. Obvious ones, like for our employees, like our first day on the job, last day on the job, anniversary of their performance, or celebration of milestones, you know. These types of things are really incredibly useful. And reading the book, it made me think about unusual things to celebrate. And if you've seen the movie Goodfellas, it's an old movie now. It's a classic though. And in that, it's a story of a young fella who falls in with the mafia and gets adopted into the mafia, basically. And in the end, he betrays them and he becomes a dauber, I guess. So he becomes a key witness in a case in exchange for witness protection. So the entire movie builds up his relationship with these mobsters who basically are his tribe, his pseudo family. And as a youngster, he was performing some petty thieving thing, and he gets arrested and he goes to court and he gets released. And out on the steps after he's released, there is the godfather himself who comes out and he's with all the other, and they're all smiling and laughing. He goes, "You popped your cherry." I can't even say it with a Goodfellas accent. But the point is, you popped your cherry. This is your first arrest. And they celebrated that. Now, I'm not recommending that we all get into this mafia gangsters thing and we celebrate how often we get arrested or tried for something. The point is, we can find things to celebrate that are unusual. It's not just about first day or last day or birthdays. We can find unusual things to do. Maybe it's the first time you performed a particular task, or maybe it's the 100th sales call that you made. The point is, find things to recognize, because the more moments we celebrate and recognize, the better our lives are, really. So here's a key point the brothers make. They are Chip Heath and Dan Heath say, transitions should be marked. So transitions from one job to the next, from one stage of life to the next. Anything significant when you're transitioning. Milestones commemorated and pits filled. We haven't talked about pits. So they do talk about negative moments. And the reason they don't spend a lot of time in the book around pits or negative moments is because their focus is on how can we create moments that matter. And usually we don't want to create pits or holes in people's experience. However, they do happen. So an example of a pit in somebody's experience is like a bad customer service thing. And so they said, it will happen. So what we don't want to do is ignore them. And sometimes in their customer survey work, it's how people handle a complaint is a memorable moment. So if we do have things that we need to make amends for, let's do it right. Let's do it well. Let's make that a signal and a sign and a representation of who we are. I once recently made a mistake with somebody who's important to me in my world. And truly, I didn't behave very well and I felt dreadful about it. An apology wasn't enough. So I sent him a big bunch of flowers with a card which expressed how much I cared for him and what our relationship meant to me. And that was an important moment. not to say that just sending flowers is something that you can do to get yourself out of a scrape. I think it represents an expression of emotion. And I think that bad thing still happened, and I do feel regret for that. However, I think we can make amends through useful, caring, carefully thought out gestures. So I encourage you to do that. So that's a summary of the content of the book. How do I rate it? Well, I have a different sort of set of ratings. There is books that I just read in book summaries, like I use the app Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, which gives you, it's a pretty good app. It gives you either a verbal summary or written summary of what's useful and what's not. So you can just skim a book. You can get through a hell of a lot of books that way, just getting the key content. If the book is good enough, like there's enough original thought and there's stuff I want to know more about, then I'll get the Kindle version. So the electronic version of the book. And I can read that pretty quickly, can highlight it. And then the third vindication of a good book is I'll go out and buy the hard copy. Very few books make it to hard copy version because those are the ones I actually want to really work with and really digest and go back to again and again. There's only a handful on my bookshelves, and that's because space in my house is premium. I've lost a lot of bookshelf space since we renovated. So where does Chip and Dan Heath's new book, Moments, sit on this scale? It's level two. So it's worthy of doing a Kindle read. It's more than a Blinkist summary, but not quite. I want to get that hard copy and flip through it once in a while. So there you go. That's my book recommendation. The link to where to purchase the book is on our, is that the podcast? Let me just re-scramble and rewind there. The show notes page is at zoerouth.com/podcast/chipdan. Okay, until next week, live well, lead well.